Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Welcome once more to the All About Windows Phone Insight Podcast, where we dissect, where we discuss and we debate the issues of the day around Microsoft's mobile platform and all the hardware partners that are involved with them. And there's at least enough hardware partners in there to get to verse 4 of the 12 days of Christmas. But joining me now on my left, the merry man that is Ray Blanford.
Hello, everybody. Great to be back and thank you, everybody, for listening.
And on your left, the man with the golden rings. It's Sonic the Hedgehog. It's not. It's Steve Litchfield.
Hello, and I've been asked by the legions of listeners out there, every time you mention Eurovision, I've got to blow a klaxon. So unless you want a klaxon on the recording, you're not allowed to mention Eurovision in this podcast, Ewan.
Hey, what about if you mention it?
Anybody.
So you need to klaxon yourself.
Oh, I've done it.
Three times. See, I started off with Sega, just to stay away from that. But there we go. Yes, we're here once more to talk about what's been happening this week in the world of Windows Phone. As always, we're going to be covering some of the stories and discussing in more depth and counterpointing what you can find on our website, allaboutwindowsphone.com. And there's some other stuff as well. And there's stories that we can basically keep on going. We've already mentioned the 1520 numerous times on the website, but it never grows old, at least for the next couple of weeks. So, Rafe, long-term thoughts, and by long-term I mean at least a week and a half, how's the 1520 going?
The 1520 is going well. I think I talked about it on the podcast when I'd had it for a few days, and I said I'd report back on kind of the size issue. For me personally, it's still too big a device. I found myself wanting to go back to the 925 and other devices of that size. It's not very comfortable when you're carrying it about. And so I found a couple of times I was out and about and I either put it in a bag or didn't bring it with me, which is kind of the death knell really for a smartphone. But when you switch back to something else, you do suddenly go, ooh, I wish I had that 1520 screen. And I don't mean the size. I actually mean the quality of the screen. Because although I think Nokia's Lumia devices quite rightly have a reputation for having pretty good screens, the 1520 is definitely a step up. I mean, Nokia made a lot of fuss about the kind of sunlight visibility, and that's definitely there, but at this time of year, you don't see it so much. But actually, that has an impact when you're inside as well. For example, you're in the kind of shopping centre underneath those bright lights that you often get around this time of year, and the screen still works when you don't get those annoying reflections, and it just seems to work well. You know, often there's that period where you have to just adjust the screen slightly or something like that to get that maximum visibility, but I haven't had that at all with the 1520, so that's really stuck out in my mind. The other thing that I really enjoyed about it is having a micro SD card slot in it. It might seem like a little thing, but it was much easier to get music and other content onto it. Now, part of the reason for that is I've actually had various Windows Phone devices with micro SD cards in them, and I was able just to take it out of one and put it into another. I suspect you're not really meant to do that, but it did seem to work okay, at least for me. But even so, it was just the getting stuff on there bit was a lot easier without having to fuss about with sort of connecting it to a PC and doing all that drag and drop process or using the official Windows Phone app. So it's grown on me as a device. I've actually become more impressed with the hardware, but from a personal point of view, it's a bit too big. I think part of that has been informed by the fact that I spend a lot of time sitting at a desk using a computer, and so the need for sort of a mobile companion on that size isn't really there. And also I do have a tablet, and I've been using Nokia's Lumia 2520 tablet. And for me, that's a better solution to have as kind of the big screen but portable device that I carry with me. You know, put it in a backpack or a bag, use it on the train, or you know, if I go into someone else's house or something, I want to show something off. It's great for that. But I'm still using the kind of the 4.5-inch Lumia 925 as my kind of main smartphone. But I think there are a lot of people who would look at the 1520 and go, it's too big. But I was surprised how close it was for me to actually saying, yes, this is a perfectly device that I'm happy to carry about. I thought it'd be a no straight away. If it'd been 5.5 inches instead of 6 inches, I think I'd have come to a different decision.
I mean, the other question, of course, is the camera, and I'm sure Steve's got some questions on the camera technology, just to keep the cliches ticking over there, because it carries on with the PureView, but it's sort of 21 megapixel range.
Yeah, it's sort of just over 20 megapixels, and it's kind of this combination of the 925 and the 1020 camera. So it's got the oversampling, but not at the 41 megapixels. You said it's 20 megapixels. And so you still get some of the kind of zoom, or the and it's, you know, real zoom. It's using the pixels, but it's not to the same degree as the 1020. And honestly, it's not quite as useful. The zooming, it's sort of two times on photos, which is enough to kind of help with framing a little bit. But in terms of actual getting close to something, honestly, it's not that big a deal. But in terms of the oversampling, it really does help. And that's why it's a step up from the 925's camera, I'd say, and the 920 and kind of other of those ilk. And there's a lot of smartphones around that, you know, 8 megapixel, maybe 12 megapixel sensor that are, you know, very good. And you can look at what Samsung's doing, HTC or Apple. But actually, I think Nokia has stolen a bit of a march by putting this oversampling technology in. It just results in pictures that feel, to use the PureView terminology, a bit purer. I haven't done as much testing as I sometimes do on this, and we're going to get Steve to take a look in due course, but it does seem to be a better overall camera phone. So it just sort of, it puts it above the best of the rest. And the 1020 is still, you know, the one to choose, but the 1520 is sort of getting some way towards the 1020. And for a lot of people, that's going to be enough, because, you know, the 1020 is very powerful. It, you know, it's that what's good enough for you. I think the other thing about the 1520, it does have the latest version of the Nokia algorithms and the processing in it. The other devices are going to get that with Lumia Black, and I think that will make an interesting difference. It'll be interesting to see whether the 1020 gets rid of some of the tint problems that some people have had with it, and same applies to the 95. I mean, we've already seen the 920 get updated and have its camera improved. Underlines the importance of those processing algorithms. I mean, Steve, you haven't been able to try it out yourself, but you've seen some of the samples come out and you've seen the raw mode and things like that. Do you think that software side of thing is going to be an important factor? You know, will there be improvements in the existing devices?
Oh, absolutely. I was astonished how much the Lumia 920 was improved in terms of the camera. The first 6 months of the 920's existence, I thought it's just underperforming. Every update just didn't quite do it. It was still underperforming. And all of a sudden, out comes this next-gen software algorithms, presumably based on those, the 925 and Nokia Amber. And all of a sudden, the 920's camera just came alive. Really, really impressive results. Significantly outperforming a lot of the competing smartphones with the same size camera. And I did see somewhere some samples of the 1020 with the and the black algorithms with before and after. I must try and dig that out on the web. Obviously, I'll be experiencing that myself in the coming weeks. And a tremendous difference again. The infamous yellow cast you get in some low light situations with the 1020 is completely gone, and everything is now white and grey and neutral, which is good because it's not yellow. And I'm expecting big things of it. So I really can't wait for this. And I'm kind of doing check for updates every single day on the 1020 in the hope that black might come my way.
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing some comparisons. Obviously, I can't do it between device, but just looking at the 1520, I'm not sure it's quite as big as update as it was going, you know, for Lumia Amber, but certainly visible in some of the pictures if you sort of look at the detail. The 1520 also seems to have slightly less distortion on the lens. I don't know whether there's been an update there or not, but it is significant. And I mentioned the RAW formatting, not of interest to most people, but I'm excited to see what that does on the 1020. And for those who are kind of looking for the, you know, the superlative camera experience, the 1020 is still going to be the device to choose. Outside of that, the 1520 still offers a lot in other areas. I mean, another kind of minor point is it's got wireless charging integrated, and so there's no need to buy a wireless charging cover or anything like that. And it's just all those sort of little bits add up to something that goes, yeah, this is one of the best pieces of hardware that Nokia has produced. And I said it in the review and I said it in the last podcast, I'm really looking forward to seeing kind of this generation of the hardware, which is effectively the third generation, in a device that's kind of the form factor and size of the Lumia 920, 925 range with the 4.5-inch screen, because that personally for me is the form factor I like most.
Yeah, just to mention a few things. The lack of distortion in the 1520's images, possibly because the optics aren't quite such as wide angle and the sensor's smaller.
That's true.
Of course, the reason the 1020 has this infamous slight barrel distortion around the outside of the frame is that they're having to pack an incredibly large sensor into an incredibly thin form factor, relatively speaking. That's where that happens. So the 1520 should get the kind of the best of all worlds. Just one point, Ray, if this 1520's got, is that a 6-inch screen?
That's right, yes.
And I do wonder why Nokia have this whole range of devices with 4.5-inch screens. Yes, the Lumia 65's got 4.7, but it's in that ballpark. And they made this huge, relatively huge jump to 6-inch screens with nothing in the middle. Now, devices like the LG G2 and the Samsung Galaxy Note have shown that the 5.2, 5.3-inch screens can be screen phones can be very popular. As going to a 6-inch screen phone, which seems, as you say, going to a quote phablet, seems like a huge jump. I wonder why they didn't put something slap bang in the middle, which would have been, you know, probably of appeal to many more people.
It's an interesting question. I think the only answer you can give here is we only ever look at the market as it is now, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if on the roadmap there's some devices with larger screens. In fact, I wouldn't be that surprised if the successor to the 925 actually goes up to 5 inches, or maybe there's one at 4.5 inches, sort of the 820 equivalent for the next generation, plus a 930 or whatever it happens to be. It does honestly feel like there's a bit of a gap there now, particularly when you compare it to the Samsung portfolio, but also, you know, Sony and perhaps HTC as well. So, yes, I mean, I think there's a gap there. I mean, the big screen is nice, and I will say that if you're going to go for a big screen device, I can kind of see the point in going to 6 inches. And you know, it's all the usual suspects, like looking at videos and web browsing. But one thing I will say is actually, in terms of holding it up as a viewfinder, as a camera, having that extra space, I think works really effectively. You know, that holding the camera in front of you to frame a digital image, having a bigger screen, I really enjoyed it. It kind of allowed me to be a bit more creative in the way I was taking photographs. I mean, that's also the visibility of the screen thing again. But you're right, it does strike me as kind of slightly curious that there wasn't something maybe in between. And you know, whether that's 5 inches or 5.5 inches, my suspicion would be there is actually going to be something to fill that gap before too long. And we'll look back in 3 months and go, that makes sense. Just as I'm sure there's going to be another low-end device to kind of replace the 520 we were talking about that last week with the 525. But right now, yes, you know, Nokia filled up all the basics and then started expanding outside the portfolio. And as a result, there's maybe a few gaps.
There's one more quick question before Ewan leaps in. You did mention about the 1520 being too large for you ultimately, but it is so tempting. I want to sympathise with you here. I had the Samsung Galaxy Mega 6.3 for a while, and you think, yes, I've got one device, literally one device that can be my phone and my tablet. I don't have to carry two devices around. There's a huge temptation to think, I can forget the iPad, I can forget the Nexus 7, I can forget my phone, I've got one device that does it all. And that's where the 1520 potentially appeals. But as you say, if you happen to handle it and carry it and be mobile all day, every day, it can get in the way, especially, I guess, in the summer. I guess winter's not such a problem because you just stick it in your coat pocket. But at certain times of the year, I think an all-in-one device, a 6-inch screen, is just a tiny bit too much.
That's right. And there is no one right answer to this. And I think, as I say, it'll depend on what current device you already have. You know, do you have a tablet or a laptop, and how do you use them, and what are your kind of circumstances, you know, where do you use them? If you spend a lot of time, so you know, office, it might not be so bad, and there's a, you know, a lot to be said for having that big screen. But I think it's just has to be enough occasions where it's annoying, or you don't take it with you, or you notice it, that then we'll put you off it. And for me personally, you know, I want a smartphone that I can take anywhere with me. I then do use a tablet, and then it's a computer, and it can be a desktop or a laptop. However, I do wonder if people are missing one of those, and it will often be the laptop or the tablet, whether this kind of large screen smartphone makes a lot of sense. And it, if you like, it is becoming, as the name suggests, phablet, phone and tablet. For those that already have a kind of established digital footprint, maybe not so much, but we're not really in the target market for this. I mean, if you talk to all the phone manufacturers, they'll say there's, you know, two or three big markets for this. And this is kind of over 50s, particularly men who basically want things to look bigger on the screen because, you know, maybe the eyesight's going or whatever. And Steve might be ancient, but he's not quite there yet. His eyesight's still pretty good. And then the other group is kind of the younger female audience, and particularly out in Asia. And that's, you know, the carrying a handbag, you know, the phone doesn't fit in the pocket, but then most phones don't. And so they're willing to go for that bigger screen. And I think particularly that's the kind of group that may be using this as a phablet really suggests, you know, phone and tablet. I suspect some of the senior users, O50, which tends to be more in the Western European and the US markets, properly used is because they want the big screen and might also have a tablet. So whenever you think about this, you can never look at it purely from your own perspective. You have to kind of consider the wider context. But I think it is fair to say, despite the fact these phones have become well established and big screen smartphones are now making up a bigger and bigger part of the market, particularly at this 6-inch size, it is kind of a minority interest. Probably not as a small minority as something like a camera specialist device like the 1020, but it's certainly not mainstream in the way that something like the 520 or the 925 or those other devices are. But I've been peculiarly fascinated by it. When I first heard it announced, I was sitting in the audience at Nokia World, and I thought, no, that's not for me. But I came really quite close to picking one up, and that really did surprise me.
And of course, the third people that are very useful for phablets are drag queens, because it makes their hands look so small and helps with their outfit on stage.
I think that's the kind of comment that's going to get some feedback, Ewan, but never mind.
Yes, there we go. Because that's what I'm here for. None of this detailed analysis stuff, none of this looking at the gaming markets or anything. It's to make cheap puns about drag queens before Christmas. Mission accomplished. Although, other missions accomplished. I didn't see the, if we stay with the 1020 here briefly, I see that Stuff had their great big awards of the year that happened last week, and the Nokia Lumia 1020 ran away with the Reader's Award, which I found very interesting. Stuff obviously had their editorial choices, but when you actually put it out to the public who read Stuff magazine, who, let's face it, are the target audience who are going to talk a lot about these devices. We've talked before about influencers online. Rafe, I was really pleased to see that the 1020 actually topped that. When you consider you have something like the Galaxy S4, when you have arguably the iPhone 5S with a number of improvements there to try and keep that ahead of the pack, the 1020, a relatively old phone in terms of cycles throughout 2013, actually made it.
I can't believe recording a phone that's sort of 3 or 4 months old on the UK market, sort of old and out of date.
Yeah, but we've been talking about the 1020 for a long time. Yes.
We have. I mean, all of these awards you have to take with a pinch of salt, because you don't know how many people voted and how everything worked. But it's interesting, you're right, the 1020's actually had a couple of these recently. There was another one about kind of photography gadget of the year and a CES award and things like this. And it is important because that's about the public perception. And the 1020, I think, particularly in the UK, has been in a lot of people's mind because it's been the hero device for Nokia's recent marketing campaign. You know, you can barely turn around in London and the rest of the UK, to be fair, on the television with Homeland without seeing a yellow 1020. And it's interesting, they haven't been using the front of the device as you might expect with the tiles. It's been all about that black camera module on the back and the circle, and it's really quite distinctive. And as a result, I think people really recognize it. And the 1020 is the first device I've had for a while where people have come up and said, oh, is that the Nokia camera phone with the great camera and loads of megapixels? And go, yes, it is. And so Nokia succeeded in that, and I think it's had a good halo effect, and that's partly why we've seen lots of sales of devices like the 520. I mean, it doesn't seem to have converted so much into selling the, you know, 1020. The sale of that is still relatively limited. But I mean, it's a good message, I think, for Rocket Takeaway and anything like getting awards, I mean, over the 5S and S4 and other devices like that. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure Nokia are very happy to do that. I think you have to take it with a pinch of salt. I mean, part of this is my personal feelings coming in. You know, I like the 1020 a lot. I think the camera is great and amazing, but it hasn't become my main device. I've actually stuck with the 925, and it's just maybe that little bit too bulky, and I didn't think the camera was, you know, quite that step up from the 808 that I'd hoped it to be. And I'm sure Steve is probably slightly horrified by me saying this, but actually the 1020 just didn't quite fulfill its promise for me. And that's partly about being a bit slow on shot-to-shot times and some other bits and pieces. Don't get me wrong, I think it's a great camera phone. It's the best camera phone you can buy. But there's just a few niggles with it that kind of do make me look forward to maybe what comes next in Nokia's camera phone kind of flagship lineup. As I say, particularly having used the 1520 with that extra performance boost, be one to watch. And there's an article on the site that's kind of relevant here, comparing the camera performance, the speed of startup and shot time between the 1020 and the 1520. And that is important, because it's about grabbing, you know, action shots and things like that. I mean, Steve, I know you've used the 1020 now as your main device, but can you understand what I'm saying with that? Just a few niggles that kind of get you and go, it's not quite the perfect device.
I can, in the sense that I know the situation, you're in perhaps indoors and you're trying to take photographs quickly, there's something going on, somebody's running around, somebody's doing a sport or whatever, and you take a photograph with 10/20 and you've got to wait 3.5 seconds before you can take the next shot. Now, that might be too long and you've missed the moment, in which case I would say that you can use the standard Windows phone camera that's built in, or even the Nokia Smart Camera. It's a mode within Nokia Camera, and both of those let you take burst or very much faster shots. But the indoors, especially with the Zenon flash, I'd much rather take 3.5 seconds to take one really good crisp shot where everyone's properly captured, than 5 photographs where everyone's moving a bit and they're all blurred on a Samsung Galaxy S4, for example. So it really does depend what you're trying to shoot, when you're trying to shoot. That's it, true. What your objectives are. And in your case, I'd say, pick the right application for the job. If you want to shoot stuff really fast, choose the Windows phone camera. You have much better results.
Yeah, it's a good point. Now, it's probably because I'm too lazy to think about changing the camera, but I think it's probably typical for a lot of users that actually remembering to choose the right camera app isn't really what you should be having to do. And that's actually kind of a good example of what I'm saying. It just doesn't quite feel it was fully implemented to that standard that you expect. And it's the performance stuff we're talking about here. When I use a device like that, I want it to work without me having to think about it. And I guess that's what falls down. I mean, there are things like not having wireless charging built in and just feeling a bit chunky. I mean, as I say, don't get me wrong, I really like the 10/20, but it's interesting. I suspect I just didn't place enough emphasis on the camera. For me personally, that's not a big enough deal to use that over the 925. But I'd be interested to hear your comments on that. If you've got them, please leave them in the comment thread associated with the podcast, or email us, or connect via social media. Okay, sorry, Ewan, back to you.
No, so very quickly, it's a very valid criticism. Just to say, obviously, with your demonstration of the 1520's camera speed, obviously we're all looking forward to the next generation, whatever happens after the 1020, when there will be a much faster processor and, say, a quarter of the shot time, at which point even you will find nothing to complain about.
I'm sure I'll find something to complain about.
Indeed, yeah. And I'll only briefly mention the 525 in that little bit there. Probably worth pointing out, Rafe, the 520 pricing in the UK, and I know it's still an old phone and my rant notwithstanding last week, but we're talking a ridiculously stupid price here on page you go in the United Kingdom now. £60 plus a £10 voucher, was it, on all the networks bar O2 for the Lumia 520. I mean, we've talked in these podcasts when it was all about Symbian Insight podcast, which is still taking over on the associated website. So the point when the big operating system gets down to that really core level, are we there now, or is this just a clearing the decks before Christmas?
No, I think we're pretty much there for the UK market. You know, as you say, £60 pairs you go, and actually if you're looking for it simply, because those devices will be locked in theory, in practice actually, if you buy them from Carphone Warehouse, they're not. It's simply for £90. I mean, partly that reflects we are now 8 months into the life cycle of the 520, so price will come down, but that really does represent fantastic value for money. And I think the 520, you can hold that up as the best value smartphone on the market, or the best entry-level smartphone. The only device that really comes close in my view is the Motorola G, and you'll generally be paying a little bit more for that. And when you're talking about £60, a £10 price difference does make a difference. That will mean someone will buy it versus not buying it. It's a fifth the cost of the device or even more. And it kind of amuses me that you can basically buy 10 of these 520s for the price of one 1520. And it's why Nokia's, been able to sell so many of them. Yes, it does feel like it's got to that point. And that's actually reflected. If you look around the high street stores in the UK, the 520 is being promoted in almost every window. It's being featured heavily in advertising. It's kind of, I would describe this almost as the £50 smartphone Christmas, and the 520 is one of the stars of the show there. And we always used to talk about it being sub £100, but it's an example of how the smartphone market has moved on in the last year, that it's now about £50. And you can look at any other market and see the similar sort of thing. In the US, it was always the $100 price point, and now the 521 and the 520 is sort of dropping below that for special offers and things like that. And equally other European markets, but also seeing some similar things out in India and Asia as well. So interesting one to note. And if you're looking to introduce someone to Windows Phone, honestly, I think the 520 is a great device to start with. And at £60, it's tremendous value for money. I mean, Steve, I know you've used the 520 and kind of recommended it to family and friends. £60, that's got to be one of the best prices we've seen for a smartphone for a long time.
Yeah, I can't think of anything in the Android market that would compete with that. You mentioned the Motorola Moto G, which is at least double that price, if not more. And I raved a lot about the 520 in the previous, all about Windows Phone Inside Pocket, so I won't repeat myself yet. It's a terrific little gaming phone, teenager phone, almost a semi-disposable Windows phone that has really good performance considering. It can't run all the top games, but £60 is just astonishing. I was almost tempted, even though I've got a 520, to go out and get two or three more and then wonder what to do with them. But maybe that's being a bit extreme.
Yeah, surely maybe you could break all of them round to do sort of bullet time camera effect triggered by the 1020's camera shutter button. There must be something inventive there that you could just, you know, we can make a better camera by using 10 520s rather than one 1020.
I can't believe it's Ewan making the geeky camera photographic suggestion on the podcast. But there we go.
I'm trying to balance things out. You're the one that brought in the klaxon and made all the mentions of that thing that I'm not going to mention, so I've got to pick up the camera stuff. Simple as that. I'm going to pick up the regulatory stuff as well, because you have to assume that with the 520 sales, there's going to be another jump in market share, certainly in the United Kingdom, have a knock-on effect over the EU5, which is going to give Microsoft a very nice little run-up when the actual sales go through. Rafe, just worth noting, another regulatory hurdle has been jumped over in the purchase of Microsoft Nokia's services and devices division.
That's right. It's the EU Commission have kind of given it the nod, basically saying there's no competitive threat here because there are other platforms out there that can provide an alternative, obviously a reference to iOS and Android. The one thing they did note was that that this decision or this kind of advisement didn't cover patents or anything like that. And there was a bit of a story around the EU saying, don't become a patent troll for Nokia, which I think is kind of ironic given that Nokia has been one of the better players in the patent space. And clearly they will be looking to make more money out of their patent portfolio. So kind of one to watch, but the EU Commission kind of firing an early shot across Nokia's bows about, you know, don't abuse your position, because Nokia do, as we've said before, have a very powerful position. But with that and the US regulatory approval coming through, it's now just a question of time. There's obviously a few more minor markets to grant regulatory approval, but I imagine it's moving into the final stages now, and certainly the, you know, completion in Q1 is almost certainly going to happen. I would suggest it might even make it into February rather than March, which is kind of what I initially expected. So we'll have to wait and see on the exact timing of that one.
I think the EU Commission's word for it, they've not to do anything illegal with their patents, which is
broad interpretation.
Interesting,
there.
Right? Yes. Don't do anything illegal with them. Just like, well, you know, that's the sort of things you tell kids when you take them to school. You've got your lunchbox. Don't do anything illegal with it. So there we go. But interestingly, and I want to tie this in with the regulatory stuff as well, because we have highlighted it before. We had the leaks today last couple of days of Nokia's Android open source project device. Now, I obviously, we've said before, one of the things that Nokia and Microsoft have to do until they actually get bought out by each other is they have to go on the assumption that they're not going to be bought. So somewhere in Nokia, I just wonder if there's a team going, you know, we got to get this done. We've got to get this out. We've got to try and release this before Microsoft actually buy us, because otherwise nobody will know what we've actually done. And I just wonder if this, Rafe, is a strategic leak to make sure everybody in the press and media knows that this device actually exists and is almost ready to go. Just so a little bit of finished sisu in there, just to sort of, we can.
I think that's maybe a bit tinfoil hat on the conspiracy front.
Oh, boo!
But just to provide some context here, this is about the said to be codenamed Normandy device, and The Verge reported some more details on this.
Yes, there's a Juno build and a Gold build and a Sword build.
That's right. And they were saying that actually it's not, when you say Nokia Android device, you immediately start thinking about a smartphone or a Lumia equivalent device. And they were saying the sources indicated that it was equivalent to Asha. And in my view, actually that makes a lot more sense than kind of having a range of Android devices, although that was in the labs, I'm sure, and Nokia have been working on that, and they'd have had all the options sort of open to them. But it's very different, you know, doing a research and development project or a kind of test project than actually taking it to market. And this does seem to be something that was being taken to market, and we saw Evleek's poster, kind of a rendered image of it. As I say, this is intended to be a device that would sit in the Asha range, so that's Nokia's cheap mobile phones, the feature phones, kind of anything up to about £100. And we've seen the most recent ones have been kind of the 502 and the 503. They currently run series 40, but on top of series 40 kind of runs this Azure OS UI, the Fastlane home screen, and various other elements. Kind of drawing a lot from what was in the N9 and Hartmatten and some of Nokia's other platforms and operating systems. So my contention would be this is likely to be an Azure device running on Android, but you wouldn't necessarily know it was running on Android because it would have a very similar UI to the current Azure phones. You know, there's some interesting history here for Nokia. Series 40 has been around a long, long time. It's feeling a bit long in the tooth. You know, there's various issues around doing some of the more recent smartphone-like experience. And it's not just about multitasking. It's about, you know, addressing different process needs and the components and things that you can do with it and the speed of updates. And Nokia already recognizes and it's kind of well known. And they were going to replace Series 40, at least at the higher end of Series 40, with Meltemi, which was kind of a Linux-based platform running with Qt, and it tied into the kind of the Amigo and the Qt strategy that was going to replace Symbian. That kind of got canned last year, partly as a result of cost-cutting, but partly as also a result of changing Nokia strategy. And that left, you know, what comes next for Series 40 a bit of an open question. And, you know, Azure OS, as it then became in the Nokia 500 and the 503, was kind of the short-term answer to that, but it didn't really answer the question long-term. And so the idea of a heavily customized Android-based device, and you might term this Noctroid if you like, isn't quite as far-fetched as it sounds. I think if Nokia had remained an independent company, it was definitely a possibility. I mean, I'd have to be skeptical that Microsoft would want to do something like this. I mean, they're taking over the mobile phone business, and there's still this unanswered question, you know, what are you going to do and what's going to happen to Series 40? But there's a certain amount of negative publicity, I'm sure, if they adopted Android for the mobile phones. I mean, I also feel there's kind of a closing window of opportunity here. And this is ultimately what I think killed off Meltemi. You know, Windows Phone is getting cheaper and cheaper. And we're seeing that. Just see that, the 520 at £60. It leaves less of a gap for these other devices. There's still one now, but in a few, you know, in a year's time or 2 years' time, is that still going to exist? And so, you know, a really interesting part of the story about Nokia. But as much as you might like to think it's all sort of evil plans in the background, you know, and I think this was kind of a contingency plan, it may still happen. I may be completely wrong on this. It'd be a really interesting one to watch. It'll certainly be interesting to watch kind of both the media and the public reaction to this if it ever did see the light of day.
I mean, there are two questions I have about this one. The first one is, of course, if anybody was, any of the regulators were to question what was going on in the 6 month process, it's a wonderful piece of evidence that they can go, no, see, we were working on something in case it did all fall through, which I think, you know, the lawyers would love. The second question is, and none of the coverage has actually said which department of Nokia it's come from. The obvious conclusion is that it comes from the devices and services division, but this is a forward-looking thing. This feels like it could be coming from the research department, and if it's coming from the research department, it doesn't go to Microsoft, does it, Ralph?
This is coming from the Device and Services Division.
It is. Do we have that confirmed?
We don't have anything confirmed because Nokia won't talk about products they haven't announced. I mean, they never publicly admitted to the existence of Meltemi, but no, actually the kind of the advanced technologies department they're talking about hasn't really been set up yet. I mean, it's the R&D labs. It's kind of the Nokia research labs. If you look at this, it's actually, you know, quite far down the path to being released. That, as I said, the rendered image looked rather like the Lumia 520, but with only one capacitive button and no kind of camera capture key. I would suggest, you know, this was being worked on for a 2014 release, which probably means sometime in the first half of the year.
Probably, I mean, reveal it 3GSM.
It's a possibility. I mean, all of this is a bit up in the air. I mean, you mentioned all the legal stuff, and of course that's there, but, you know, you wouldn't be entirely unreasonable thinking, you know, would Nokia rush this out just for the sake of doing it? It seems unlikely. I mean, business just doesn't work that way. It, you know, become an orphan device. But as I said, it's not totally unreasonable to assume that Nokia are looking for, you know, a way to renew Series 40 and putting in Android underpinning. And when I talk about, you know, it being Android underpinning, we're just talking about the operating system. You could take advantage of the drivers. That would mean you'd be able to, you know, use some of the same processors and low-cost components as the Android smartphones are using. It wouldn't necessarily have the full kind of Android smartphone experience. In fact, as I say, it would just be this Nokia UI, and then it would be able to use some of the apps from Android, but it might be quite a controlled experience, just as the Azure devices are at the moment. And so people hear this and see Android knocking, they think about smartphone. That's probably the wrong way to think about it. As I say, a possibility, I would still be somewhat skeptical, but it'd be interesting to see how this one develops.
Indeed. Of course, I have a sneaky suspicion that we're probably not going to see any more of this development. It's just going to sit there with, along with the great big pile of N9500s and the Odin. Remember the Odin, Steve? No, Odin, Steve, I don't even remember Steve. There we go.
I'd rather meet myself there in shock at the Odin. That was 1999?
Motorola and Cyan.
Indeed, yeah.
I never had one. Of course, you had all the fancy prototypes, you and I got rather left out.
I think I'm still in no comment territory on that one. But color screen rev with Bluetooth and GSM. Wow, there we go. Again, no, doesn't exist. Nope, never saw it. Right then, let's move on with the games. After my little piece last week of saying that Microsoft should just kill Xbox Live branding on the platform of Windows Phone, still up there on the website, allaboutwindowsphone.com. And, you know, my point has been kind of proven this week as well. Angry Birds Go has been released, which is the karting version of the Angry Birds franchise. It's an amazing. You take a platformer and you break it out by putting it into a karting game. Never been done before, ever, ever. Came out, no Xbox Live branding. Minion Rush came out from Gameloft, no Xbox Live branding. We're waiting. And rumors are pointing out that Temple Run 2 and Grand Theft Auto San Andreas will be coming in time for Christmas. Temple Run 2 may well get Xbox Live branding, but not Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. So there we go. Three out of four major franchise names, all of them skipping over Xbox Live. All of them very much expected and wanted on the platform. The defense rests on Xbox Live. But looking at these games in particular, let's start with Angry Birds Go. It's out here. It's carding. I suspect now that these birds, come February, March next year, will be Finland's biggest export, Rafe.
No, I imagine it will be Microsoft phones.
Meow! In fact,
I don't know. Actually, I think in terms of Finnish exports, it's mineral resources and timber and things like that that's still the biggest export. I'd have to check. I'm not really up to date on the increases of the Finnish economy.
Oh, such a shame, really. What do we think of Angry Birds Go, though? Sound a carding game, but it's got quite a bit of bad press already before its release.
It has. I mean, a lot of this is down to having a £90 or something like that in-app purchase. I mean, honestly, I can just about swallow a £10 in-app purchase. I mean, muttering darkly in the background, but that kind of level. It combines a lot of those in-app purchases then with kind of timers, and so your bird gets tired and can't do a race, and so there's definitely quite a heavy push to get you to upgrade. You know, it's kind of Angry Birds, but, you know, with Mario Kart. And actually, when you start playing, it's quite good fun. I just wonder whether they've got the balance quite right, especially when you think that to Angry Birds, where you get so much of the game for free if it's ad-supported, or for a relatively small payment, you get a lot of value with the, you know, the premium add-ons that are now part of the experience. Relatively speaking, a thing that you can have if you want to progress faster or solve a particular level, but certainly not necessary in quite the same way it feels like it is in Angry Birds Go.
I mean, Steve, going to come to you on this one. Surely what we're just getting is a free trial download, and then you pay, well, in the case of Angry Birds Go, $3.99 to double the income that you get from the coins, which actually makes the adoption of all the power-ups and everything to quite a sensible level. Surely this is just another way of doing freeware and shareware, like you used to do in floppy disk.
Yeah, I'm all for that, but two problems. One is that Rafe says you can get these stupidly high premium purchases you can make, which is not a problem. You, as an adult, you just ignore them. You don't pay the £99 or whatever, but you hand this to your teenage kid or to your eight-year-old kid, and they think, oh, I want all those coins, and they tap it before you know it. Unless you're very, very careful, you run the risk of a fairly hefty bill. And my second
you have
point,
the pin activated on your wallet. You mean the wallet feature in Windows Phone 8 deals with this, surely?
Well, what actually happens? You know, do you have to enter a password, or does it just say, do you want to buy it, yes or no, and you tap on OK?
But if you've added the PIN code in the wallet, then you have to put the PIN code in before the purchase goes through on your phone.
Well, I haven't done that, you see. That's my problem.
Anyway, right. That's why you've only got bills with £90 cars.
My second point is, of course, what happens if you switch devices? Now, a lot of people listening to this are like us. They're early adopters. And they switch devices. They might have two or three Windows phones. They might buy it on one phone and then want to use the game later on a different phone, or they might upgrade. How portable are these purchases? On several of these games that you've been reviewing, and quite rightly picking up the developers on this, you buy it and it's associated with that device. You then buy the, you download the same game, the same freemium game on another device, your new phone, your new smartly phone, and then you've got to do the in-app purchase all over again. With the old model where you think, okay, it's a game costing $3.99, I'll pay it, I'll buy it later on, new device. Do you wish to buy this? Yes. You have already purchased this. Do you wish to install it again? No extra charge, no hassle. That's such a simpler way to do it. And to the extent now that when I browse the Windows Phone Store for games, I completely ignore the free list. I completely ignore it. It is dead to me. I look at the paid list. I look at the list of games where you actually pay them to get a decent game, which you can then download as many times as you want, install it as many times as you want on as many devices as you want. And that's my rant over.
But to counterpoint that, there are a number of games that do have that cloud save. Jetpack Joyride springs to mind. There is an option, so now people are going to restore your purchases, and it is up to the developer. They have got it sorted on other platforms. Briefly look over iOS, and the fact that iCloud allows you to do exactly what you're trying to describe there, Steve. But at the same point, we have to also take in mind that the one-off purchase payment worked 5 to 10 years ago in the software market. Nowadays, it does not generate enough money for developers to fall. We've already seen a number of Scottish developers this year fold, not just for Windows Phone, but covering all of the platforms. I mean, Solar Flux is an absolutely fabulous game from a team up at Dundee, but they folded because not enough people were buying it. They were going for a much more traditional model of a paid download. Paid downloads are great for that security for the user, but they are not providing developers enough income. To the point that this is why we have freemium. You have the whales. You know, if you have one person buying a £90 car, that will subsidize 10 people using the freemium purchase and 100 people playing the game for free. You know, the economics are that money, the developers need money. So I'm afraid you can't ignore the free list, and you can't avoid freemium, because if you do, you will have nothing in the store next year.
Yeah, surely the solution, though, is to have the best of all worlds. You have a quote freemium title with a sensible in-app purchase that's preserved across devices and doesn't have any shock in-app purchases that might frighten later on. So you really can have the best of all worlds. Developers can win and consumers can win.
Rafe, you can jump in here, but I would argue we actually do have that just now. Broadly, there are isolated circumstances where you don't have the saving facilities, but I would argue, Steve, we have that now.
I mean, I think the question here isn't so much about business models, because I don't think, you know, what you've got here are various different ways of monetizing the games, or, you know, allowing developers to earn money for what they're doing. And that's fine. And I think actually it's great to have different models, because that's, you're going to find that different titles work in different ways. And it's going to depend on the sort of user segment you're targeting as well. I mean, some people aren't able to, you know, buy any games or apps for whatever reason, so ad supported is great for them. Others may be able to or don't want to spend it initially, and the in-app payments work well there. And I think the variety we've had come in has been good for the app ecosystem. The problem is that, you know, some people will take against a particular one, and, you know, that's happened with people not wanting to buy up front, and a lot of people are very anti that and they have to have a trial, and I think that's quite understandable. Equally well, you'll get people who don't like in-app payments. A lot of that comes from when it's badly implemented. It's not necessarily something wrong with the business model. It's how people choose to implement it. And I think the cloud save is a good point there, as is kind of losing your in-app purchases if you go to another device. There are ways around that, and actually a lot of developers do get that right. I mean, I think specific to Windows Phone, that's where Microsoft could do more to provide a kind of a gaming back end. And we see this on the other platforms. You know, Google does it, Apple does it. You know, Microsoft with Xbox Live, it's been very much about tying into the Xbox console. To me, it should be more about providing a kind of level of services for games across platform. And I think there may still actually be an opportunity for, you know, an independent company to come in and kind of provide, if you like, a gaming framework back end of some kind that works across multiple devices and multiple platforms. Kind of getting a bit off topic there, but that's, you know, so Ewan was talking about going away, Xbox Live saying goodbye to that, getting rid of it. I see the point, and honestly, I don't get any value from kind of sharing a gamer score between a Windows Phone and an Xbox console. But I would see value if, you know, that Xbox branding meant that I could guarantee that I was getting certain things with regard to in-app purchase or other elements of it. But it is a kind of an all-or-nothing approach, and that's a problem. You know, you get some games that don't do it, and that you end up with annoyed users, and I'm one of them. I mean, I don't particularly like freemium titles that as I would describe it, take the piss. I'm quite happy to do an upgrade, and you know, my personal level is I'll happily upgrade to unlock some extra levels or, you know, some extra game functionality one-off. I don't really like add-ins that kind of run out, so that tends to be currencies or you're buying boosters that only work for a couple of levels. That tends to irritate me a little bit more, but everyone's different, and so Ewan's probably right. You know, there is this subsidy effect where people who are willing to buy, you know, subsidize those who are not, and as a result probably more people get access to these games than might otherwise be the case. But I have sympathy on both sides, but I think there's probably shades of grey and some measured ground we could stand in the middle.
That middle ground would be, we'll review, we'll look at it, we'll tell you what we think, and you can then use your own skill and judgment to decide whether you should download the titles we review. We've already covered Minion Rush, which has also come out this week. Angry Birds Go will be up next week. Temple Run 2, Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, when they arrive, I'm sure will do. Steve, that good enough middle ground for you?
Yes, okay. I'll try a few more of the premium titles, but I'm still watching out for those ones which have outrageous, as Rafe says, taking the piss screen.
I think what we need to do is give Steve the job of the 10 most outrageous in-app purchases of 2013.
As if you can drain my bank balance. Yeah.
Excellent. I will say one of the good things is, though, we're seeing a much healthier gaming scene on Windows Phone in general. I mean, a lot of this has come about because of the gaming engines like Unity, and that's something that's really positive. You know, it's not just Angry Birds Go coming out at the same time. I mean, I wrote a short flow on a tennis game that came out this week, and it was on Unity. It came out about a month after it came out on iOS, but it just wouldn't have been there last year on Windows Phone. And there's plenty more titles coming, you know, Temple Run 2, San Andreas, that's going to, looks like it's going to have a simultaneous release across all the mobile platforms. And that does mean that actually, as kind of, you know, gaming smartphones, Windows Phone is doing a lot better now. It's not equal to iPhone or Android, but there are now enough titles on it that someone can buy a device and they'll find plenty to keep them occupied and busy. If they must have the latest releases, you know, before anyone else and want a constant stream, honestly, iPhone and Android is still a better choice. But I think it's that old chestnut, it's good enough. And for 90% of people, there isn't going to be that much of an issue with gaming on Windows Phone anymore. And that's a big change from a year ago.
Indeed. We will have all of those thoughts wrapped up with the reviews and our editorials going forward to the end of the year and into 2014 back on the website. It's going to be our Christmas special next week before we retire with the eggnog and the John Wayne box set. Not saying who's getting the eggnog and who's getting the John Wayne box set from my two co-hosts, but thank you as always to Steve Litchfield.
You're welcome. Catch you next week.
Thank you to Rafe Blandford.
Thank you as always, Ewan, and thanks to everyone who's been listening.
Indeed, yes, and anybody out there who would like to make even more Family Guy references in the comments, please do so at allaboutwindowsphone.com. I look forward to reading them and printing the best ones to put on a t-shirt. Ta-ra for now.